It is a big game, and playing Steph Curry and the Warriors, we look at it as a game seven for sure. It's a must-win for us. What you know about
rolling down in the deep? They got a lot of doubt down there. We got a lot of belief.
Curry, step back three. Bang! At the buzzer!
Here we come.
They can't stop the freight train.
Count it and one. Lob it in. Davis throws it down. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good! LeBron James from downtown! The Lakers are in the playoffs. The Warriors need to play on Friday. What a thriller here at the Staples Center.
Welcome to The Jump, presented by Dell.
Man, I'm still hyped watching that from last night. I got the goosebumps already. All right, welcome to The Jump. I'm George Sedano, in for our fearless leader, Rachel Nichols. Today, I'm joined in studio by our senior writer, the undefeated Mark Spears, ladies and gentlemen.
Back
good
in the building.
You. Good to see you in person.
I almost cried when I saw you.
I know. I got the big bear hug from you. I loved it. And, of course, our senior writer, who we always love chatting with. I love talking to her each and every day. But I get a chance to do it. Jackie McMullen is joining us here. Jackie, how are you?
I am. How are you doing today, George?
Excellent, excellent. Of course, Malika Andrews will join us a little later in the show. Let's get started with the Lakers, who narrowly defeated the Warriors in the play-in game for the seventh seed last night. LeBron James nailed this three with 58 seconds remaining, the shot clock wind down, and apparently one good eye, okay, to give the Lakers the lead, which they were also obviously able to hold on to. And here's LeBron after the game with our own Rachel Nichols.
We got to talk about that shot you hit with about a minute left. The three, you didn't even look in rhythm there. What were you thinking as the ball left your hands?
I put in a lot of work in my game. After Draymond finger to the eye, I was literally seeing three rims out there. So I just shot at the middle one. And I was able to, through the grace of the man above, I was able to knock it down.
It's like Rocky movies. Remember when Mickey used to tell, Paulie told Rocky, punch the one in the middle. So, Mark, what changed for the Lakers in the second half?
Defense, and this is something we're so enamored with offense that we don't talk about the Lakers' top-ranked defense. They held the Golden State Warriors to 100 points. They caused Steph Curry to have 7 turnovers. They caused Draymond Green to have 7 turnovers. They basically stifled the Warriors, and I'm telling you, if they're going to repeat as champs, being a great defensive team is going to be something that they're going to hang their hat on the rest of this season.
Well, I agree with you to a point. I think what really happened was LeBron happened. Yeah. LeBron had a poor shooting half, as did his superstars, of course. And it didn't look quite right to me. He didn't have the lift that we normally see with him. But what one thing LeBron can do is pass the ball as well as anyone I've ever seen, especially in pressure situations. And all those backdoor pass cuts to guys like Caruso, he got Anthony Davis in places where he was comfortable. And then the other thing, Mark, I would say is Golden State's going to look back on this game and be pretty bummed out because those turnovers you mentioned, I think a lot of them were careless and to some degree unforced. So Steph and Draymond, who were so brilliant in the opening half, they sort of gave it away there in the third quarter, and we know this happens with this team from time to time. And the other thing is, they started fouling, and that's been their biggest Achilles here all year long, is Golden State puts players to the line. And when you do that to a team like the Lakers, who are struggling and weren't in rhythm, ask any shooter, they'll tell you it's a great place to start feeling good again when you get free shots from the free throw line.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go, please.
No, and I think another thing is we certainly need to be concerned about LeBron James. If you watched him, he was actually supposed to run the point guard, and he kept deferring to Schroeder, letting Schroeder bring the ball up. I'm hearing he's playing on one leg. So to see him not get a rest like the rest of the playoff participants who aren't in the play-in, to get this game yesterday was super meaningful for him, because had they lost and won Friday, he would have had just one day off. So I'm really nervous for the Lakers in terms of his health. And I do wonder, when they do play the Suns, because they had some success against the Suns without LeBron, if AD is supposed to, if AD's AD, then I wonder if the Lakers get the first one, should they let LeBron sit a game and try to rest that ankle?
Okay, let's tackle one thing at a time here. Look, Jackie, you made a great point. LeBron went LeBron, right, for the second half. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But here's the thing, and Mark, you brought this up earlier, which is their defense, right? And if you look at this Lakers defense this season, when they had everybody healthy at the beginning of the season, which wasn't for very long, they were the best defense in the NBA from a defensive rating perspective. When it was just LeBron and the group without AD, in that span, they were the number two rated defense in the NBA. And in the stretch of almost 20 games or so, when they didn't have either guy, they were still the fourth best defense in the league. So that is their backbone. That is their calling card. And that's what Frank Vogel has been really great at throughout his career as a head coach, too. Now, I heard this part about you telling me LeBron playing on one leg, and we can all assume that. But you are suggesting that perhaps they could, or you they may consider, or you believe they should consider resting him if they get a game?
Yeah, I know the Suns are looking at me like, oh, that's a lack of respect. No, I have great respect for them, but that by the way he played, by the way he deferred, giving the ball to Schroeder, LeBron gave a will to win in the second half that is second to none. That triple-double game, 22, 11, and 10, that was off of grit. But I could think you could tell, and Jackie mentioned to it, he's in a lot of pain, and there's a long way to go if they're trying to repeat his champs, and you got to manage it.
Jackie?
Yeah, you're playing with fire, Mark. If you start sitting LeBron James during the postseason, he was allegedly on a minutes restriction last night. I don't know where he landed on that. But I don't think you need to go to those measures. Maybe you're just a little more judicious in how you use LeBron in these games. You know, you mentioned Frank Vogel, George, and one of the other things that I thought he did in this game that was really smart that we all knew he would do and that it's the way I think they should play going forward is he shifted Anthony Davis down to the five. They're a better team defensively and offensively when he's playing from the five spot. And I don't think it was a coincidence that they started to pile up points and get some stops when you put AD at that five.
Yeah, no question about it, right? Harrell wasn't in there. Gasol wasn't in there. Drummond wasn't in there very much at the end. And Wes Matthews played a big role defensively for them, kind of giving them a spark. Yeah. Let's move on here. Having secured the seventh seed in the West, the Lakers, as we mentioned, will face the Suns in the first round of the playoffs. According to Caesars William Hill, the Lakers opened up as big betting favorites here, a minus 300, but that's since moved to minus 170. It's the first time in at least 30 years that a 7 seed is favored over a 2 seed. So, Jackie, is this surprising to you?
It's not surprising to me at all because were the Lakers healthy, I think we would have been talking about LeBron James in another MVP race, and we would have been talking about them either at the very top of the East or about to win the East. And I think what the reason people are selling on the Suns is because there's so much inexperience in that lineup, George. You've got Chris Paul and you've got Jake Crowder, but beyond that, think about the key components, DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson. LeBron has 14 postseason appearances. Those guys have zero, a combined zero. So that's why people are not buying the Phoenix Suns. But I would say be careful. This has been a team that's been versatile all year long, very consistent. And Chris Paul has been an MVP candidate with the way he's been running that team.
Well, I don't trust Vegas. In a lot of ways, I think they're just always going to push forward the popular team. So, you know, I get it with the Lakers, and they are defending champs. But you see that guy right there, number three? CP is going to have them ready to play. CP is due. And I think with Book's a elite baller. I don't worry about him playing on this level. Ayton and Bridges. But I think CP gets this team ready to play. And while, you know, Davis has had his way with the Suns, CP is going to make sure this is a battle royal.
Yeah, look, I don't think there's any question. We all know Chris Paul is going there ready to just, you know, muck it up if he needs to and do whatever needs to get done to win. But I just think, you know, forget about just the playoff experience, which Jackie, you pointed out so astutely, right? Like, that's huge. I don't think there's any question. But I just don't know how deep a team they are, right? Like, when you look at their roster, like, how far down the roster do they really go where you have guys that you can trust, right? Maybe 7, right? Like, that to me is a problem against a Lakers team that has already played plenty of games and treaded water without LeBron and Anthony Davis. And now that those guys are in their roles, I think that they should be able to kind of move forward and kind of take care of the Suns pretty quickly. That's just my humble opinion.
But if it goes long.
Oh, well, if it goes long and LeBron gets hurt, yeah.
Jay Crowder's watching you right now, yeah. George. Jay Crowder's got something to say to you.
Right, but he to your point, though, it's Jay Crowder, it's Chris. I know Devin Booker's going to show up. I believe DeAndre Ayton will show up. I like Mikal Bridges a ton, right? But
they don't have
that,
anybody to guard AD. That's the problem. Right. He's had really big games against them. Yeah. 42, I believe, one of the last appearances. And I think the Lakers are going to have to, LeBron included, sit on AD's shoulders. He's got to get them past the series, help LeBron heal up. But they have no answer for him. He has to be dominant. He has to be in the post. He has to be aggressive. Can't just be three-pointers. And if he could do that, I think the Lakers can get past him.
Yeah, and he wasn't necessarily that in the first half yesterday. So after the loss last night, the Warriors will face off against the Grizzlies in the play-in game tomorrow for the final playoff spot in the West and match up eventually with the Utah Jazz. The winner of that round will play them. So, Mark, what are your expectations for this final play-in game?
You know, I watched their game the other day. I think the Warriors, they have this champion experience. I've seen them play with their backs against the wall over the years. Obviously, Klay's not there, but they're at home. They've been there, done that. They're not going to be fearful of that. I wonder how Memphis is in this moment, playing against Steph and Golden State. I like the Warriors. I like them to handle Memphis. But the one thing that Memphis can do that they stopped doing in the previous loss is they got to go to Valanciunas all day, feed him, let him get a double-double 20-15 game. And if they could not try to match buckets with Curry and force feed Valanciunas, I think they'll make it really scary for the Warriors.
I'll tell you what, if I'm Steve Kerr, I'm going to get my film out and I'm going to play the first 5 minutes of that third quarter from last night over and over and over and over again. So Steph Curry and Draymond, the two guys that you need to be at their very best, can see the lackadaisical turnovers that they cost and what it cost their team. You do that, you get that right. I do like the Warriors. Ja Morant, to me, is a wonderful player. We know he's going to be around for a long time. I do think he's been pressing a little bit. I thought he pressed a little bit in their game the other day. But they have a lot of great young talent. Maybe they've got their nerves out of the way. It'll be a really great game. I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah. They're not afraid, for sure, the Grizzlies. They have been fun to watch, too. But I do like the Warriors just on experience. All right, coming up next, what's your pick for Dunk of the Year? Well, we'll run it back with our top five in chronological order, and then, of course, our picks. But first, it's time for our distant replay from this date in 1994, featuring our guy Scottie Pippen.
Oh, I know this one.
Oh, Patrick.
Ooh, yes.
Oh, no. Oh.
Stepped over him.
How can you do that to your dream team compatriot?
Then Spike got some, too, right?
Yeah, everybody got some there. You get some. You get some disrespect. One of the greatest
dunks. That's pretty nasty. Is that
playoff history?
Can that compete with the ones we're about to look at?
Oh, hell yeah, for sure.
You bet.
Jesus.
You bet.
You got that poster?
Of course. Come on.
The Jump is presented by Dell XPS.
All right, Mark and Jackie, The Jump's been breaking down all the NBA award candidates this week and Rookie of the Year. It's been a two-person race for the most part, so I'll start with you, Jackie. Who's the Rookie of the Year?
I mean, it's not even close. It's LaMelo Ball, and I know he missed a lot of games. And in the MVP race, I think that mattered, but not so much in this one because he was just so far away the best one over Anthony Edwards. But your boy Tyrese Haliburton, good showing, George.
Mark?
I'm going to have to go against my Hall of Fame friend. Anthony Edwards averaged 20 a game. He didn't miss a month. I just think he was amazing from the beginning to end.
I'm with you, Ant-Man. Let's go. All right. Okay, back to the postseason. Both Trae Young and Julius Randle are making their playoff debuts in the first round, basically pick'em series between the Knicks and the Hawks. So, Jackie, I'll start with you. Who's facing more pressure in this playoff debut, Julius Randle or Trae Young?
Well, which guy plays for the New York Knicks, which is synonymous with pressure? So Let's start with that. And it's funny to me, you say that Trae Young's in the playoffs for the first time. Doesn't it feel like he's been around forever?
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. There's 9 players in double figures for the Hawks. So if Trae Young, you know, misses a few shots, it's all right. He's got Bogdanovich and Gallinari and John Collins and Kevin Huerter to pick up the pace for him. I feel like so much of the New York Knicks' success is on Julius Randle's very broad shoulders.
I'm with the Hall of Famer. You got a guy that's woken up a downtrodden franchise, some sad zombie-like fans who haven't seen a championship since I was an infant.
Yeah, I wasn't even born yet. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, so it's there's a lot. He's in the Mecca of basketball. they're thirsty bad. And Spike Lee, I'm putting it all on Julius, and I really think that he has the game to get him past this series and make this playoffs interesting.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with both of you respectfully for this reason. The Knicks fans, they shouldn't have any expectations. There should be no pressure, okay? This team was, you know, we thought maybe they'd make the playoffs, right? Here they are as the 4 seed. They are the favorite in a series. They might get past the first round for the first time in Lord knows how long.
George.
Hold on.
I get it.
But you should just be happy to be here, is my point. Like, don't sit here and create.
Nah, man, New York state of mind, baby. You know how it is.
You're from the wrong part of the country.
I was
born in Manhasset, New York, whether I like it or not. I'm telling you, the other thing we should mention, though, with the Knicks, when R.J. Barrett plays really well, they almost always win. So let's not put it all on Randle. R.J. Barrett's had a great year.
Yeah, but
so I think they can do something, and they need to.
I think they're going to win the series. I picked them in 7, okay, on ESPN.com. But what I'm saying is this. Just enjoy the ride, man. We didn't know you were even going to be here. So just enjoy. Don't add expectations.
You don't understand.
By the way, Trae.
You don't understand.
I do understand. I lived there. I get it. Like, you know what I'm saying? But, like, what I'm saying is this. It's like Trae Young. You know, to your point, Jackie, we feel like he's been around for a while now, you know?
Hey, can I jump in real quick?
Go ahead.
Yep.
Speaking of somebody who's been around for a while, why haven't the Hawks given Nate McMillan a deal?
That's a good point.
That's absolutely terrible. He's done a fantastic job taking over this team.
What is it, 27-10, right?
And last I heard, they hadn't started any negotiations with him. This is a guy that has done a fantastic job after taking over for Lori Pierce, and he deserves it. Top 25 coach.
Yep.
Hawks ain't going to get anybody better than that. So I don't know what they're waiting on.
So that's
where the attention I think should be right now.
Yep. I agree. I agree for sure. So, Mark, thank you, my brother. It was great to see you in person.
Great to get the
bear hug. Great to have you in studio.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah, for sure.
See you, Mark.
Shout out your girl. All right, Ramona Shelburne's ESPN cover on Joel Embiid, her cover story. In it, Joel calls himself the most unstoppable player in the league and answers the question, is this the year the process is completed? Keep it locked to the Jump. The 76ers have gone through a maturation process over the past year. They have a new coach, new role players, and are sitting atop of the Eastern Conference. Meanwhile, Joel Embiid is playing at an MVP level, adjusting to being a new dad, and leading the 76ers on both ends of the floor. So, is this the year the process is finally complete? Our very own Ramona Shelburne spotlights the superstar center in our latest cover story. Let's take a look.
Embiid already with 21 points. And throwing down two. And he is hurt. And this, for Sixer fans right now, is a breath-holding moment.
I just thought my season was over. It has to be an ACL or something because of the pain. As it happened, he just woke up and just started crying out of nowhere. He just started screaming out of nowhere. He looks like he knew.
Embiid down the lane!
Well, Embiid, I'm from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
After 5 seasons of trusting the process, 27-year-old Joel Embiid still has much to prove.
I'm the most unstoppable player in the league.
Embiid, my goodness!
I'm 7'2", I'm good looking. I'm pretty intelligent, too.
The first career 50-point game for the dominant Joel Embiid. Process that!
This year, he's playing like an MVP and embracing a new role, leaving many to wonder, Is this the year the process is finally completed?
I want him to say, may win a championship. I want him to see his dad as the best player in the world.
I'm Ramona Shelburne, and this is ESPN Cover Story.
What's up, Ramona?
What's going on?
I'm good. How you doing? I've told you that before. I feel like my life is a movie. My father was in the army, and he also played handball, and he was one of the best. So I always saw him as like, you've raised the ball high, so I gotta do better than him.
You're quite a bit older than your brother, Arthur. 7 years older, right? But you called him your best friend.
We were so close when you talking about video games, and when I always asked my mom stuff, she would say no, but she would always say yes to him, so I would always use him to go ask for something just for me.
Arthur was just 10 years old when his big brother left for Cameroon in 2011, chasing a dream.
I've always been around my family. I never left their sight. To go alone on an adventure where you don't know the language, you don't know anybody, it was tough. Everything happened so fast.
The Philadelphia 76ers select Joel Embiid.
Within 3 years, I made it to the league.
I still can't believe it. It just means that anything is possible.
4 months after being drafted in 2014, Joel received a call from Cameroon. His brother Arthur was walking home from school when he was hit by a truck and killed. He was 13 years old.
I couldn't stop crying. I was all over the place. I was, you know, throwing stuff, and I was just trying to understand. The next day, I was on a plane back to Cameroon. No one has gotten over it to this day. I mean, we all still shocked. And at that time, I was just like, I don't want to come back. Like, I just want to stop playing basketball.
Why'd you decide to come back?
I just felt like, well, I got to do it for them. I got to do it for my family.
After a 2-year delay due to injuries, Embiid found his way back to the court in 2016.
Nerves, maybe they go away, right?
Now you just play basketball.
Oh, there he is with a block, and they're loving it.
After the block, you know, them just going crazy. That was the start of something special.
Building the Sixers from the worst team in the league into contenders became known as the process. Embiid embraced it, as his highs and lows were the embodiment of it all.
I was talking to Wendy. She was also crying. She knows how much I care about winning and about winning a championship.
Soon enough, the process became about more than basketball.
This thing is too dangerous.
In 2020, with his partner Annie by his side, Embiid committed to reaching the bar set by his father.
We had a plan, but it was still not a guarantee. That it was going to happen. It was pretty exciting.
On September 16th, 2020, Annie went into labor.
We went to the hospital, and that was the same day that the All-NBA stuff came out.
Which player would you say is the biggest snub from this list?
I'm looking at it, and I'm looking who made it, and I'm like, better than all of these guys. You know, in those cartoons where, you know, people have like holes and, you know, the hair start coming out and stuff. That's how I felt. I saw it, I was so pissed off. I'm like, I can't believe this. But in that time, I'm like, well, I can't react though. I can't show anything because, well, this is what I care about more. I just knew his first name was gonna be Arthur. My little brother, he's still with us. You know, he's part of us, and he's never gonna go anywhere.
Oh, that's
really nice.
After Arthur's birth, Embiid vowed to elevate his play. This season, his 29 points and nearly 11 rebounds per game have the Sixers on the brink of clinching the top seed in the Eastern Conference for the first time in 20 years.
This year, I'm just all about business. At the end of the day, I want to be considered one of the greatest of all time. I want him to see his dad as, you know, the best player in the world, just like I saw my dad.
A very touching story there with Joel Embiid and a great job by Ramona Shelburne. Coming up, Malika Andrews will join us to talk about James Harden and the expectations for him in this Nets squad. But first, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Our pal Justin Tinsley pens a story on theundefeated.com on Allen Iverson and Vince Carter's epic playoff duel, back in 2001. Go check it out during the break. Jackie, with the Jazz and Sixers leading their respective conferences and awaiting their first-round opponents, who do you believe is a scarier matchup in the playoffs, the Jazz or the Sixers?
Well, my answer might be different if Donovan Mitchell hadn't missed all the end of the season and if Mike Conley hadn't been banged up. So I'm going with the Sixers and Embiid and Simmons. They are so tough defensively, they just have to make sure they can score enough.
Malika?
I agree with Jackie on this one, especially when you just consider who might make it the farthest. When you look at the Sixers' path to the play to the Eastern Conference Finals, right? Statistically speaking, it is the easiest path. It is easier than what the Utah Jazz would have to face. They're a pretty scary matchup, George.
Yeah, listen, I don't want to mess with Joel Embiid this season the way he's playing. That's the way I look at it. It's the Sixers for me. Welcome back here to The Jump. We welcome in NBA reporter and writer Malika Andrews. Let's start with James Harden here, who missed over 5 weeks with a hamstring strain. He played in just two games before the end of the regular season and wasn't scoring at quite the same level as he was before he got hurt. Here's what he had to say yesterday about his play. Let's take a listen.
Your stats haven't been quite the same in these two games back. You haven't been quite as prolific. Do you feel like you're 100% right now?
Yeah, I'm back. I thought winning was all that matters. I mean, when I was doing the stats and putting up the numbers, and it wasn't good enough. So I mean, at some point we got to figure out what we're talking about. It's all about winning. Like, I don't care about stats, my impact, and you know, don't have to show up on the stat sheet for us to win. Today in practice, I had 0 points and we won.
So, Malika, what are your expectations for James here in the playoffs?
I mean, with those braids, George, they're pretty high. But let's take a look at what he was saying there, right? He's saying that, look, I've been back for two games, right? That's all that he was able to play after that five-week absence for his hamstring. And in those two games, yeah, in one of them, the last one, he only had 5 points. In the other, he had 18, which is slightly less than what he's been averaging for the Brooklyn Nets this season. But James Harden has stepped into this role of facilitator. His assist numbers have still been high. He's looking at the fact that he's able to gel rather quickly with this group, and he repeatedly said, you know what, this is not all about me. And he told me that that's a little bit of a shift from how it was for him in Houston. He knew that the weight of the world, especially the brunt of the scoring, they needed him to do that if they were going to win. And he feels a little bit differently, he said, now because of all the ammunition that this team has. So yes, he has high expectations of himself. He went on to say that 1,000% he thinks that some teams can say things like, if we be the best version of ourselves and do all the right things, then we are going to win. He said in the Brooklyn Nets case, that's actually a quote that applies. So he's holding himself to a high standard, but he's also banking on the fact that not everything that he does for this team, creating that synergy, is going to show up in points per game.
So Malika, you say a little shift from Houston. I would say a seismic shift from Houston. They did need him to do a lot. And by the way, he wanted to do it. He wanted to have the ball. He wanted all those points, right? I think this is one of the most surprising things that I've seen in a while. What James Harden did when he was traded to Brooklyn, the willingness to be that facilitator that you referenced, to let Kyrie and KD take all the big shots. He's sacrificing shots, minutes, points. And I think if he continues to do that, it's going to help the Brooklyn Nets win the whole thing.
You know, Jackie, it's funny you mentioned that, and Malika, you as well, because when he and Mike D'Antoni got together in Houston, I thought to myself, oh my goodness, this is going to be like Steve Nash, you know, on steroids, basically, right? Because you're talking about a more prolific scorer with this amazing passing ability, this great court vision. Sure. And I feel like the first year was a little of that, but to your point, Jackie, like it wasn't that at all. Kind of it morphed into something completely different after the fact. It was like the opposite of D'Antoni ball. So, Malika, let me ask you this, though. With Mike there on the staff, like, how has that helped facilitate, I guess, James's indoctrination to the team?
Well, James Harden would say it absolutely helped. It was a plus when he's looking at where he wanted to land, which contender he wanted to land with. But he also would say there was a couple of other factors, like playing with Kyrie Irving, like playing with Kevin Durant. And he would say, when he's been asked in the past, that, look, we're all world-class basketball players. We don't need one individual person to make it all work, but it's certainly something that helps. And Steve Nash has said, especially early on this season, because there's been so many variables that are unfamiliar, that are unlike anything else that any team has seen in any season just because of coronavirus, he leaned heavily back on his staff, like Mike D'Antoni, like Jacques Vaughn, other guys that have had this coaching experience because Steve Nash hasn't had it before. But over the course of the season, we've slowly seen Steve Nash just blossom a little bit more in that head coach role, but it certainly helped, right? It didn't hurt Harden's assimilation into the Brooklyn Nets.
Jackie,
let me
just ask you a quick question, George, because I'd love to just quickly get the answer here from you guys. Like, to me, I look at this team, we all know they're going to score, right? Like, we don't worry about any of that stuff.
Right.
But I wonder defensively, and Jackie, I'll start with you, right? Like, that's been, you know, certainly a point of emphasis that people have focused on. And they've had good defensive moments, but a lot of those defensive moments have come with guys who may or may not be utilized as much in the rotation, right, when it comes to the playoffs, because these three guys are going to play more. So do you worry about them and their lack of continuity defensively at all?
So I asked this question, George, to every GM and every coach that would give me an answer, and they all said, are you serious? Don't worry about it. These guys know how to defend and will defend when it dictates it. So I said, okay, because they know more than I do.
Yeah, I mean, what James Harden said yesterday was pretty similar to what Jackie McMullen just said, which is that, look, if our defense, that's what we need to worry about. That's what we need to put our energy into and focus on, because we know what we're doing on the offensive side of the ball. Defensively, it's about effort. They're going to be filing in behind Kevin Durant, who's going to have the primary assignment of covering a Jason Tatum. But they've said it's a group effort. They know that they may not be a top 10 team in defense. We know that tests the past of who's been able to win championships. It's largely those top 10 defensive teams, but they're banking on doing just enough. And Kevin Durant says, if we have that mindset that we're going to do the best that we can be, that will be just enough, because we just need it to be good enough to offset the scoring that they know they can do in bunches.
Quick prediction on the series. We know Jason Tatum can go off in any given moment, right? We saw the 50-point game the other day. Malika, we'll start with you. Just your quick thought on the series.
It's hard to see the Nets losing this one. Jason Tatum is incredible, and the Celtics will certainly only go as far as Jason Tatum will take them.
Jackie?
You know what, George? The Celtics, as long as Brad Stevens there, have held their hat on defense, specifically guarding the three-point line. They have done neither of those things this year. I don't see how the Celtics win the way they've been playing defense all year long.
Yep, I agree with you, ladies, for sure. All right, coming up next, we'll play one of our favorite games, Jump Ball Playoff Pick'em Edition. A little more of this, but first, it's time for our second distant replay of the day. This one from this date in 1993 with Sir Charles Barkley. What do you got here, Chuck? What do we got?
Robinson on Barkley. It's his game to win. Well, we go to overtime.
A little running start. Ooh, a little pull-up from Charles.
Here we go. Whoa, whoa.
8 seconds.
There you go, Chuck. For people who say you didn't have that in your bag, okay?
Love you, Charles.
You can shoot jumpers.
I was at that jump
shot. And that's on David Robinson, a seven-footer. Definitely better than your golf swing, even though that's improved lately, too.
And like David Robinson's free
throw, low bar.
We love you, Chuck. Time for a playoff pick'em edition of Jump Ball, starting with the play-in game tonight. Jackie, who you got? Pacers or Wizards?
You know, when I was watching the Pacers destroy Charlotte, George, earlier in the week, it made me remember, you know what, before injuries, they were a pretty good team. Sabonis looked great, Bogdan looked good. They looked keenly interested in continuing. I couldn't say the same for the Wizards, so I'm going with the Pacers.
Oh, I have a hard time betting against a Russell Westbrook who is leaving the floor early, walking back to the locker room, shaking his head, clearly in disappointment. He said afterwards he wasn't feeling 100%. We know Bradley Beal's not at 100%, but it's a little bit of a toss-up for me because betting against a Russell Westbrook that is motivated, that's a tough thing to do.
Yeah, I would agree.
Especially without Caris LeVert.
Yep, I will add that the Wizards also took control of this series during the regular season, although I don't put a ton of stock in that. I feel like Russ is angry about what transpired the other night, and I think they get the win. But moving on to another matchup in the East, the 6 versus the 3, Heat and Bucks. Jackie, who you got and how many games?
You know, this is going to be one of the best series of all. I love both of these teams, but I will say this. The X factor for the Bucks has been Jrue Holiday. They were 5-8 without him. Mm. He's been a great two-way player. He's shooting 52% on pull-up twos, George. But here's the thing. They cannot let the Heat get out to a big lead. I didn't know this till I just looked it up. The Bucks are 6-23 when trailing by double digits or more. That's not good news, so they better get ahead early on the Heat because they're a tough team.
I'm on the sidelines for this game. I am really looking forward to this matchup. One thing, though, I've been told by someone close to Jimmy Butler, he is locked in. He is focused. He hasn't played against these guys, so there's a little bit of an X factor there, too, right? We know how Jimmy Butler gets, but there is so much riding on this series for the Milwaukee Bucks. They need to go far in the playoffs this year. There are a lot of implications. A lot of that rides on that Jrue Holiday.
Yep, I got Heat in 7. Look, to your point, Malika, Playoff Jimmy is a real thing. I think Bam has taken a leap. And the Heat are healthy for the first time.
Homer.
They started the year 7-14, Jackie. They're 33-18 since, which is equal to all the other powers in the East.
George.
So there you go. Next up, 6-seed Blazers against the 3-seeded Nuggets. Jackie, who do you got, Blazers or Denver?
Well, you'd think we should take the Blazers because Jamal Murray got hurt such a long time ago and we thought that would be it for the Nuggets. Not so fast. Michael Porter Jr. has broken out just the way we all thought he might. He's my runner-up for most improved player in the league behind Julius Randle. I think the Nuggets take this series.
The Nuggets are a tough matchup for the Blazers. They struggle against really dominant bigs like Nikola Jokic, who is likely going to be the league's MVP. It is hard to go against Denver in this series.
All right, I got Blazers in 7. Real quick, just give me a prediction, Jackie. Clippers, Mavs.
I'm taking the Clippers, two-headed monster to guard Luka and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Not too shabby.
Yeah, I just think the top of the totem pole there with those guys. The pyramid there is too strong. And look, I think Luka's great,
absolutely,
but can you trust Porzingis? I think that's the question in that series. We'll see. I'll be on the sidelines for that one. Thank you, Malika. Thank you, Jackie. Thank you to Mark Spears. The jump is off tomorrow. We're back Monday. See ya.